All right. Good morning, Beneficent. It is really good to be back in the pulpit. It's been a while. You know, Todd and I usually do like a month at a time, and so we each get a nice long break, and then we get a whole month to kind of bring a series or a theme or whatever. So this month, we are doing, you know, we're doing this whole year of a psalm for all seasons, and we are moving to a new psalm. It's Psalm 139, and we have a new banner in the front that has our Psalm 139. The psalm is a little longer, so I'm not going to do the whole thing. We'll be working on it all month. But hear this psalm. O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know when I sit down and when I rise up. You discern my thoughts from far away. You search out my path and my lying down and are acquainted with all my ways. Even before a word is on my tongue, O Lord, you know it completely. You hem me in behind and before and lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is so high that I cannot attain it. Where can I go from your spirit, or where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, you are there. If I take the wings of the morning and settle in the farthest limits of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me and your right hand shall hold me fast. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me and the light around me become night, even the darkness is not dark to you. The night is as bright as the day, for darkness is as light to you. For it was you who formed my inward parts. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. It's just, it's very beautiful. It's one of my favorites. So I wanted to tell you a story about when I was a teenager. This is a typical teenager story. My mom and I started fighting a lot and having all these arguments. And the arguments now, they all kind of blend together in my mind, and they seem very inconsequential. But they are, were usually about clothes, who I could spend time with, who my friends were, how late I could stay out, and exactly what I would be doing when I was not at home. So if these arguments might sound something like this. Mom, Carrie and I are going out to a movie tonight. I'll see you after 11. And my mom would ask lots of questions like, when does the movie start? Is anyone else going to be there? Why are you dressing like that if you're just going out with Carrie? Who is driving? Then she would calculate like a math teacher. Home arrival time must equal the sum of the travel time to Carrie's house, plus travel time to the movie time, plus return. And return time equals the sum of X plus or minus 15 minutes. And then I would argue, what if I get hungry and I have to stop and eat somewhere? I mean, you wouldn't begrudge me food, would you? What if the movie previews are longer than expected? What if I have to be late because of that? And this outfit is the same thing that everybody else is wearing. It has nothing to do with who I'm going to see tonight. You just don't understand. And then my mom says, this is what she says, I changed your diapers. I sterilized your bottles. Of course I understand. I know you. On some level, my mom does understand me. And that kind of sterilize bottles, change your diapers kind of ultimatum, it disarms me every time. And she still says it every once in a while. So, because she was there from the beginning, she does know me. She's known me the longest. And when I became a parent, a good friend of mine reminded me that my mother used to take care of me the way I take care of my daughter, spending time with a newborn, you learn to know when she wants food and when she wants her diaper changed, when she needs to be rocked. And you know when the cry means I'm hungry, or when the cry means I'm tired, or when the cry means I'm mad. And it's a kind of intimate knowledge that ties you to that child, well, forever. Now, Psalm 139 is a little bit like that. It's about God's intimate knowledge of each of us. O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know when I sit down and when I rise up. You discern my thoughts from far away. You search out my path and my lying down and are acquainted with all my ways. The knowledge that God has for us is kind of like a parent's knowledge of her child. It's not exactly the same, but it's kind of like that. It is knowledge with intimacy, knowledge with care, knowledge with love. And it is about God's desire to know us so that God can understand, so God can protect and guide and challenge. And in this knowing, the psalmist references the self, the people, us, as being seen at the deepest center, at the very core. In Psalm 139, God is a holy, intimate, and all-knowing presence. There is something both so utterly desirable and about being known by God, but also something really scary. It is part of the human condition to want to be truly known, truly understood. And at the same time we desire to be known and understood, we desire to know ourselves, to understand ourselves. The ancient Greek philosophers command us to know thyself. Or in Shakespeare's Hamlet, the character Polonius says to his son Laertes, above all, to thine own self be true, and it must follow as the night the day that thou canst not then be false to any man. How can we be known to someone else if we don't know ourselves? All of us question who we are, and I can't think of a better way. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who is a theologian in his 30s that led a plot to kill Adolf Hitler during World War II and was killed himself. And he wrote this poem while he was in prison. Who am I, this or the other? Am I one person today and tomorrow another? Am I both at once a hypocrite before others and before myself a contemptibly woebegone weakling? Who am I? They mock me, these lonely questions of mine. Whoever I am, thou knowest, O God, I am thine. It's like those words from Psalm 139. I don't know who I am, but you know, God. The truth is that there is a part of us that doesn't want to be known through and through by anybody. We want to maintain strict control, especially those of us that have control issues, over who knows what about us, how much they know, and when they know it, right? Isn't that why marriage is so hard, right? You get married and you are tied to that person, presumably forever. Your spouse knows maybe not everything about you, but a lot, and you can't always be at your best. At some point, everyone gets tired and cranky and petty and small-minded, and we all let it out at some point. We are our worst selves to the person we love the most. And isn't that why some of us resent our parents sometimes? Because we know that sometimes our parents really do know us better than we know ourselves. Because they've watched us since we were babies. And we resent that. We don't want to think of ourselves as truly vulnerable to anybody. We don't want anyone, even God, to know everything about us, no matter how much we say to the contrary.
Psalm 139 reminds us that we don't have to hide from God. The truth is, we can't. We can't hide from God. The psalmist says, "Where can I go from your spirit?" It's a rhetorical question. Where can I go? Or where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you're there. If I make my bed in Sheol, you are there. If I take the wings of the morning and settle in the farthest limits of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me and your right hand shall hold me fast. The psalmist tries to imagine all the places that he could go to hide from God. These are spiritual reaches of the soul, to heaven, to Sheol, the wings of the morning and the limits of the sea, the most remote, faraway places that the imagination could go. And even there, God does not leave us. God will not abandon us. Your hand shall lead me and hold me fast. It seems the writer is trying to run away from God, but nothing, no matter what, nothing can keep God's hand from holding fast. It's like going for a walk with a toddler, and you're holding on to that hand, and they squirm and twist and say, "I want to walk by myself." And God will not let us go it alone, no matter what we say. We argue with God. "Who are you to look into my soul and see me for who I am? Leave me alone." We don't want to be known. We want to hide. We come up with all kinds of excuses, ridiculous excuses, fancy mental backflips to convince ourselves we don't want to do what God is calling us to do. Sometimes we question whether God even exists at all. So we pretend to be someone we're not. We put on a show for the world that everything is fine. We smile, we laugh, we pretend we are the character called happy. When someone asks, "How are you doing?" we say, "Great, I'm great, I can't complain." But underneath all that fakeness, on the inside, we are slowly, little by little, being eaten up, dying a little at a time. Paul Laurence Dunbar, a famous African-American poet from the 19th century, expresses that desire to hide from ourselves, our true selves, in the public. It's called "We Wear the Mask." We wear the mask that grins and lies. It hides our cheeks and shades our eyes. This debt we pay to human guile. With torn and bleeding hearts, we smile and mouth with myriad subtleties. Why should the world be overwise in counting all our tears and sighs? Nay, let them see only us while we wear the mask. We smile, but, O great Christ, our cries to thee from tortured souls arise. We sing, but, O, the clay is vile beneath our feet, and long the mile. But, O, let the world dream otherwise. We wear the mask. For Dunbar and the African-American community, wearing the mask isn't just about protecting the individual self. It's about protection from racism. And church, this church, is a place where we don't have to wear a mask. We know that we can be ourselves, where we can be authentic and real and flawed and confused, because here we belong. We know that God loves and cares for us just as we are, behind the mask, with all of our imperfections and not quite measuring up, depressed or in a bad mood or not feeling cute or pretty or smart or fashionable or skinny. Under all of those judgments that we carry around, God sees us as we are and says, "It's okay. I love you anyway. You can't fool me. I know who you really are. You are beautiful to me, fearfully and wonderfully made. You belong here. This is your church. This is God's house. This is a place to rest your head under the protective shelter of God's warm embrace." The truth is that my mom was right. When I was a teenager, I was not completely honest with her all of the time. I thought I could fool her. I thought I could tell little lies and she wouldn't be the wiser. I thought I could create this picture of me, this made-for-TV Nicole, that would be a likeness of me, but not really me. I was too afraid or too ashamed or too confused to just be myself. I don't even think I knew what it meant to be myself. And all of the while, my mom was telling me she understood me and I couldn't see it. Our relationship with God is a little bit like our relationship with our parents, but it's not the same. Whatever knowledge or understanding our parents have for us or have had for us, it is limited. And sometimes as we get older, that the gulf between us gets larger. It is limited because our parents are only human beings who see us in human ways, and God is holy and all-knowing, forever present, and sees us on the inside. In the presence of the knowing, understanding God, we are relieved of all necessity of pretend. We develop our sense of self-worth, our somebody-ness, the sense I am somebody, not just from our biological families, but from our spiritual families, our church, the people who love us here. Truly, it takes a community, a village, a group of committed, prayerful believers to help us see ourselves for who we are and love us just as we are. Amen. All right. We have a hymn that is also printed in your bulletin, called All My Days.